Hard Line. Enter at your own risk.
Welcome back to the Hardline 5-9 The Fan, Kevin. That's 5-9thefan.com. I am former Missouri wide receiver TJ Moe, along with John Hadley, who stepped outside to smoke. Big surprise there. And Matt Rocchio running the board for us today. Joining us now is our friend and the voice of your St. Louis Blues, Chris Kerber. Curbs, how is your off week, sir?
TJ, so far so good. Looking forward to the team getting back on the ice tomorrow. And we'll see what happens come Saturday night in Columbus.
Yeah, we saw you a little bit the other day. This is a little bit different because of the bye weeks, and it's been quite a long time since a game. Do they handle this differently than years past?
They are. The problem that I have with what I'm seeing, though, is if Columbus has already started playing and the St. Louis Blues are going to be coming off of a bye week, that really does give Columbus a hell of an advantage on Saturday. I know a year ago they tried to make sure that everybody coming off of a bye week played somebody coming off of a bye week. I just don't know what the scheduling quirks led into this year's plans were.
Is this something, I know in the NFL, and typically they don't even let you on the field during a bye week. A lot of guys go home. Is that similar in the NHL where you're not even really around the facility?
Yeah, most of the guys go do their own thing, and you're not allowed to force the guys in any kind of practices or any of that kind of stuff. So, that's the... That's pretty much the way it works for those guys. Now, if a guy wants to go skate on his own and stuff like that, he's more than welcome to.
Yeah. So there has been our first blockbuster trade of sorts for this winter. You look at Jake Muzzin of the he was sent to the Toronto Maple Leafs for Carl Grundstrom, I think, and Sean Durzi. I think I'm saying those right. Also a first-round pick. Now, a lot of people think that was a light return, but bringing that back to St. Louis, if you're comparing the two, that's a decent haul, albeit that first-round pick is going to be at the end, likely, of the first round. But if you are going to unload an Alex Pietrangelo, they were on similar contracts that both end after next year, would you be looking at a similar return or something even better?
That's hard to say. I go back and I look historically at what happened a year ago, and that is that when it came to trade deadline deals, teams, only five first-round picks were dealt. And, of course, there won't stash any trade. I do think it does tend to set a market. But I also believe, TJ, that market changes because, and fans know this, fans see this, the market adjusts. That might be what they got now. Well, the trade deadline market might look even different. Look, they got two second-round draft picks, prospects. Prospects are prospects, and none of them, very rarely are they surefire prospects. So, you just have to wait and see. For example, Eric Foley. Mm-hmm. The Blues acquired Eric Foley, who was a pretty good prospect. Well, the guy's got a concussion, and, he's almost non-existent now. Could he be something? Who knows? But I'll tell you what. He's totally off the radar in terms of this year, in terms of the things that's going on. So, I think that first-round draft pick is a little more positive for a team like L.A. What it does do is it shores up one side, and now that starts to adjust what teams could be looking for in terms of some of the Toronto Maple Leafs' needs. So, that's how the whole market adjusts based on that. So I've heard some pundits think that it was a bit of a light return. I've heard some think that it was a good return. All I do believe, though, that Rob Blake in Los Angeles realized, okay, that for Jake Muzzin, the opportunity there to get the crack at two prospects and know that I'm going to get a first-round draft pick, I'll go ahead and make that deal now because, frankly, that old adage of a bird in hand is better than two in the bush is a pretty good deal when it comes to trade deadline deals.
I was on NHLTradeRumors.com today, and one of the lines here, and I can't...
Why would you do that?
I'm trying to learn how to pronounce everybody's names, really. I was hoping next to it everybody would give me a phonetic how to pronounce this thing. In fact, they do not do that, though. The way I gather this, it's actually kind of hard to understand, but it looks like it may be from Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic here in his mailbag. In the portion for the Blues, he says, finally, look to see Alexander Steen get shown the door via a buyout. The possibility increases by the day. A couple questions on that. One, do you agree with that? Two, I've asked this question to a couple hockey people, and nobody's been able to give me an answer yet. If you do buy somebody out, do you have to come up with all of the money remaining on the contract today, or is there an agreement that it's paid out similarly to how it would have otherwise been paid out over the same time period?
Okay, I got to ask you a question just for some clarification on here, because I haven't seen the article and I really don't delve too much on you know, MLB or NHL trade rumor sites, just because all it is throwing stuff at the wall, for the most part. But so the question I have is: it Jeremy Rutherford saying that Alexander Steen is prime for a buyout, or was it a fan?
It says Jeremy Rutherford of The Athletic, and then he says this is from the mailbag. And so I'm not actually on the I'm not subscribed to The Athletic, so I can't.
Okay.
But the way it reads, it appears that it would be from Jeremy Rutherford.
Gotcha. Well, so here's what I would tell you, you know, when it comes to the buyout scenarios. I don't know anything about, you know, Alexander Steen in that scenario. What a buyout is I believe if a player is of a certain age, and when you get to 33, 34, I believe the buyout is 60% of the contract that gets spread out over whatever, twice the whatever the remaining term is. So the Blues would essentially, in that case, owe him 60% of what's remaining on his contract and could pay it out. If he has 2 years left, they could pay that out over 4 years. However, that number spread out over the 4 years is what counts against your cap. So a buyout doesn't mean complete cap relief by any means.
Mm.
It's not a way of circumventing the cap. It's only a way of helping you with your cap management. So the St. Louis Blues are actually the only team under the current buyout, you know, bylaws that have not bought a player out.
Oh, really?
Yep, they're the only one that has not bought a player out. And so I don't know I have no idea what they've talked about or how they've talked about it, but that is the buyout scenario. So, you know, again, even if you owe a guy and it's, you know, and you're paying him, you know, 60%, you know, and you owed him, let's keep it real simple. If you owed the guy $1 million a year over the next 2 years and you bought him out, so you're paying him $600,000, you could spread that out over 4 years, and so it becomes $300,000. That $300,000 still counts against your cap.
Okay, so
it, 4 years.
It does alleviate it substantially, though.
Oh yeah, it does. It does give you it right. It doesn't eliminate it, but it does serve as a form of cap relief. So, one way that fans could look at buyouts, it's a way of buying cap space.
Well, and not something, because I think a lot of people are aware of the financial position that the Blues have been in, and typically need to be making the playoffs in order to turn a real profit and see how things work. The Blues typically are not in that discussion for good reason. I think that's why people have been so reluctant to say that. So if this is indeed, again, I'm not subscribed to The Athletic, which I probably should be.
Well, no. Let me jump in here real quick on that, TJ.
Mm-hmm.
I got to tell you, I got it. Like, first off, the rumors of what the fans think the financial situation of the St. Louis Blues in, I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock into that. It's a lot of different things that go into it. Now, yeah, are you a team like the New York Rangers or like the Montreal Canadiens or like the Toronto Maple Leafs? No. You know, that's not how this market goes. Are you a team that's going to buy three guys out to, you know, and eat it? Are you going to sit there and turn around and do what Chicago did and pay Crystal Ball UA $5 million over a couple years to play in the minors and just go away? No, you're not. However, the Blues ownership, since Tom Stillman took over, has made every available dollar that they're allowed to, per the rules, available for this team to spend right up to the cap, you know, and to compete in free agent markets and stuff. So, you know, from a financial standpoint, I don't think fans really should have any angst or any worry about that kind of stuff right now, because the commitment of this ownership group, and Tom Stillman came out and said this a couple weeks ago, when he was asked the question about does a down year, if that were to happen this year, does that impact what you might invest in a team next year? And he says, no, I don't think that would be the case. It doesn't deter us from what our ultimate goal is and the belief that to be a Stanley Cup contending team, what we will need to spend to be able to do that. You know, so there is that aspect of it. So, I also think the other reason that, you know, the Blues haven't really been involved in buyouts is, for the most part, Doug Armstrong has had some really good contracts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm going to have some fans, TJ, that might argue that with me. And right now, as we sit right now, yes, you can make the argument that the Jay Bouwmeester one, with Jay's struggles in the last couple years, right? If Jake Gallen can't find a way to get consistency, you could look at that one, and sure, there's some time left on Alexander Steen's contract, and that production has really dropped, right? But up until this point, I'd look at it and say that I don't know that the Blues have been in a situation where really the need for a buyout has been there.
Yeah, and I personally think when you look at even the Steen and the Bouwmeester ones, when they signed Bouwmeester originally, I don't think there was anybody in hockey who thought it was a bad deal to start. And the Steen one, I honestly, I don't see how Armstrong lets Backes and Steen walk in that same window without fans absolutely freaking out on him. And so to say, and we see now with Backes, he's struggling a little bit with his age to fill out, you know, to really produce for his contract level in Boston. So, you know, with hindsight, yeah, we can look at those and criticize, but in the moment, I don't know if you can really say that at the time that those were egregiously bad contracts, either one of them.
When you bring up the David Backes contract, obviously the Blues weren't willing to go the extra year that Boston did. I said this at the time that he signed that. I still believe it could be the case where David Backes becomes a buyout candidate, a pretty good one for the Boston Bruins after the third year, which is this year. I don't see that contract playing out to fruition, whether it be after the third or fourth year. But, you know, you're right. You're looking at some of it. You look at the role that those guys were playing. And, you know, I think some might have questioned some of the timing and the number on Alexander Steen just in terms of every factor that's involved. You know, but, yeah, I don't think you anticipated as much of a drop-off in performance from those two guys as we've seen at this point in time. Now, I'll throw this out at you, too, though. Letting veteran guys go, though, versus paying some to stick around and be mentors and stuff for some of your other players is also a critical thing. One of the reasons that I truly believe one of the reasons that the Edmonton Oilers have stunk and continue to be inconsistent and bad is they didn't keep enough and bring enough veteran guys around to help show some of the young guys the route. And sometimes you're going to have to do – if you're in a transition where you're trying not to – you're not in a total rebuild, but you're trying to transition from one core to a slightly younger core – you might have to overpay a guy a little bit to keep him around, but his presence can be just as important as the production on the ice. And that's an aspect that it's not quantifiable in goals and assists, and I think can really make a huge difference. So you don't need a whole lot of those, and you can't have a whole lot of those in the salary cap era, but it is still a factor when you're trying to build the team and create a culture.
Yeah, roster construction is certainly no exact science. I want to clarify something though about the financial position. And I know we don't obviously no particulars or anything, but and I'm not even asking you to evaluate Alexander Steen. But if it was determined that Alexander Steen was not going to be a part of the team, or they didn't think that he was good enough to be a part of the team in the future with his declining speed, and he really isn't living up to the contract, and he's taking up space that otherwise would be given to a younger guy, would there be any reservations with his contract to buying him out?
I think there would be, yes. In that situation that you're asking, I think it would be because in the end, because of what that contract is valued right now, I still think it's a, you know, you're still going to end up with a cap hit, I think, of over $1 million, you know, even in a buyout scenario. That's if I'm remembering his contract scenario right. So I still think just depends on what you're, you know, okay, how much cap space do you want to have committed? And then, you know, and then kind of going from there, what you can do with that cap space. And, you know, you look at the fact that right now, if you look at the way the Blues are constructed, your first option, I think, TJ, is can you trade a guy?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was put into place, right, a couple of years ago, and this was a big thing for Brian Burke when he was a GM in Calgary, and especially after the salary cap era came in, is the ability for teams to keep money. Because it used to be there, then it was taken away when a salary cap came in. Well, the ability for teams to hold back, so you can trade a guy, right, and you might be able to trade him and say, okay, for the last 2 years of his contract, I'm willing to pay $1 million of that contract and still have that count against my cap, right? But versus a buyout of having, say, that cap hit extend an additional 2 years beyond that. Does that make sense? I don't know if I'm saying that properly, but, you know, sometimes if you can work a trade where even that same cap hit amount is only on the books for 2 years versus four,
yeah,
that looks very different for a team.
Right, because it doesn't necessarily clear it when you trade a guy. You're still going to have a cap hit because you were the one that signed the original contract.
If you are keeping, if you are continuing to pay part of that contract. So if the St. Louis Blues, want to trade a player, and the only way it'll work is for the team that they're trading it to, say, because the other team doesn't have cap room right now, says, right, is you've got to keep $1 million of that salary, right? So you've got to pay him $1 million of the five that of the contract for that year, right? A team can do that. That $1 million still counts against the Blues cap, right? The rest of it counts against the other team's cap. You know, if you make a trade of a player and that cap hit is only 2 years versus 4 years, that's another way of managing, you know, the cap. Cap management is a critical part of what's going on with rosters right now.
Curbs, I have one question. You like to delve into the world of marketing. I think I may get into the world of professional.
I know this guy's voice.
I think I'm going to get into the world of professional wrestling for one reason only, and that's because I've decided that the best name for a new wrestler is Polar Vortex. So I'm going to come blown in, freezing every wrestler that comes my way as the Polar Vortex.
Man, I was for a little while there recently following the Iron Sheik on Twitter, but man, he gets mad.
Yes, he does. That's an angry cat.
Like honest to God, guys, go up and just pull up the Iron Sheik's Twitter feed and read it. You're going, oof. I'm like, okay, I'll just, when I want some funny laughs, I'll log on rather than have it automatically come into my feed.
Did you see, I just pulled it up, Curbs, actually, in all caps, the one that's pinned to the top. I guess he thought this was a great idea since he tweeted back June 9th. In all caps, take a minute of your day to be nice to someone, you dumb son of a... Right into it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yep, that's it.
Good grief.
Polar Vortex signing out.
Curbs, I don't know if that means John's leaving or if you have to go. I would like one more question, and that is, of the Blues, I don't want to grade based on what is actually an A. For instance, like I don't think Oscar Sundquist is an A player, but I think he's played his A game so far this year for where he is. Of the Blues players, I think Ryan O'Reilly, I think Oscar Sundquist, and I think David Perron are the only guys, maybe Bennington, he hasn't played much, that have played their A game so far this year. Am I missing anybody, and am I off on those three?
Nope. I would say if I had to give A grades, I would give it to those three. I would probably, you know, David Perron's totals give you an A. I think some of his play earlier on, some of the penalties he was taking, you know, might take me down to an A-minus or a B-plus, but you're 100% right. In terms of consistency of play, game in, game out, those are the three guys that I would probably put that on there. You know, I wouldn't give Ivan Barbashev an A, but his plus-minus isn't very good. But, you know, some of his totals and the consistency that Ivan Barbashev has brought, I would put him there. But in terms of the rest of your top players and the top guys you've been counting on, I'm not sure I'm giving any of them even a B.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't know about how you guys feel about that, but I'm not, and I hadn't thought about this until you guys kind of threw that at me there, TJ. So, you know, I put a little asterisk on that, but just off of expectations alone, I'm not sure. And what we know that you can get from their caliber of play, yeah, I might give Robert Thomas a B because of the challenges and everything that, you know, that he's gone through and the way his game's come along and his progression there.
Sammy Blais not been bad. He's been up and down a little bit.
No, I wouldn't. But Sammy Blais has been given a really good opportunity, and the problem is he's been up and down.
Mm-hmm.
So he hasn't found a way to grab it.
What about Zach Sanford?
I'm honestly – No, I wouldn't throw him in there as a B yet either. I think, you know, keeping this grading scale in mind, a C is average.
Mm-hmm.
A B is slightly above average, and I don't know that I would put anybody else in the slightly above average category, if I'm being very fair and honest.
All I know is that coming up, it's the main event, Ivan Barbashev against the Polar Vortex.
I would apologize to you, Curbs, but you've known him longer than I have. So, I mean, there's no apology needed here.
You know what? Every now and then, TJ, we just tried to get him to take a deep breath, hold the dinner, and see if we could get a little more oxygen up to the brain. It works. It works every now and then, you know, and stuff. But, no, all good. Well, let's just get the guys back. Hopefully we get some guys healthy. They'll hit the ice tomorrow and then another practice before going to Columbus. It's going to be a heck of a battle because you're playing a team in the Blue Jackets that have got some issues now and what they've got to decide to do with Panarin and Bobrovsky. They're starting to find a little consistency, but they've already started playing again. So that's going to be a challenge. And this is a critical five games coming out of this break because you've got Columbus, then the Panthers who have been improving and had the Blues numbers earlier this year, and then you got the best team in the league in Tampa. And then you're going to go back-to-back with Nashville. And so, man, oh, man, what a critical stretch of five games to come out of this break against. And you got to hope this team's ready for it. You know, I know they're looking for a little more strength and work from Robbie Fabbri. And I think, to me, Robbie Fabbri was a wild card coming in. I didn't think you could count on him just because you just weren't sure of the injury. So, I still think he remains a wild card here in the second half if he can get back into the lineup and find a way to produce. But Jaden Schwartz has got to start finding the way to put the puck into the net. I mean, guys, you're talking it's now 73 periods of hockey with Jaden Schwartz not scoring a goal on a goaltender.
Jeez.
I mean that's big. And while, look, in his last 14 games, he's had 62 shots on goal. He's getting chances, but it's just not going in. Vladimir Tarasenko needs to start lighting it up. Jaden Schwartz has got to start putting some pucks in the net and alleviating pressure on these guys. Tyler Bozak had started to play some of his best hockey going into when he got injured. They need him to be more impactful. He was playing too many benign minutes, I think, at the beginning of the year. They need Alex Petrangelo to be their best defenseman, and if he's not going to be it, then it's got to be Colton Parayko and Joel Edmondson working up there. They need more consistency from Vince Dunn. And in this final run of 33 games, with them controlling their own destiny, they're 3 points out with games in hand and 2 games at least head-to-head with every team in front of them. The Blues are back to controlling their own destiny. You put all that into play, and it's going to come down to are your best players being your best players? And if they are, you got a good chance. If they're not, you can't look at the general manager and say do something because, again, there's just been too many that have not been. They've really turned – I think they've turned a corner mentally, guys, and I'm excited to see what happens because if they come back ready to go like this thing had ended going in, I think the Blues are going to be in some pretty good shape.
Oh, I think there's – I mean, there is not a shred of doubt in my mind. It's a Hadley guarantee that this team makes the playoffs. Mm. Now, my question moving forward is because the time you keep saying you're too good at what you do, mandating follow-up questions, because you mentioned Edmondson's name. Let me ask you the question. If we see the day, whether it's this trading deadline, the end of next season, sometime, let's play along with the notion that Petrangelo is not here in the near future. Nobody ever mentioned Edmondson's name. Am I crazy in believing that Edmondson is captain material?
No. I've never been asked that one yet. I'm not. No, you're not crazy in thinking that. I don't know what you do in that situation, to be honest with you. You know, if 27, you know, wasn't here or doesn't have the C, you know, I think O'Reilly becomes an easy guy to look at there. Defensively, could you look at it? Yeah, I could. I could see a Parayko growing into that role. I really can. You know, I don't know, John. I don't know there. See, here's the thing. I don't know if they look at Joel Edmondson as a top pairing defenseman or if they look at him as a really, really good third or fourth. if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. No, I understand. Back in the day, you didn't have to be the biggest name player or the marquee player. It was the guy who oftentimes either led in the room or led by example on the ice. And as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to a guy who just goes, does his job, Edmondson's right there.
He is. I think they're looking for more out of him. Obviously, that's why Craig Berube scratched him for three straight games. Mm-hmm. They're looking for better decision-making, better puck movement, things along those kind of lines. But I got to tell you, I go back to 2 years ago against the Nashville Predators. I liked what Parayko and Edmondson did in the playoffs. I like that pairing. I'd like to see that pairing stay together, and I'd like to continue to see, you know what happens to them. So, and I guess we could wrap it up with this. You go back to what TJ was asking about in cap space. You know, you've got some unrestricted free agents that are coming up, and Carl Gunnarsson and Jay Bouwmeester. You're going to have some cap space freed up here. You're going to have some room for guys to start taking more minutes and going from there, you know, depending on what decisions Doug Armstrong makes. So it really becomes – although I will tell you this, I do tend to disagree a little bit with something Doug Armstrong says. Doug Armstrong believes, and I understand where he's coming from, that the players kind of dictate what happens at the trade deadline, right? And what he's saying is the level of effort and the commitment and the play that you're seeing out of the players is what leads you to believe whether or not that group of players has what it takes to go on a run. And if they aren't showing it, well, then you make decisions that are better for the long-term, you know, success of the team, like the team did last year with Paul Stastny. I also think, though, that sometimes the moves of the general manager can also dictate how the room thinks and how the room feels. And so I think there's more of a two-way street than it sometimes goes with that.
Good stuff, Curbs. Thanks so much for your time, as always. We'll be listening to you on Saturday.
All right, guys. Sorry again for the delay, and thanks for adjusting for me. Appreciate it.
Now, anytime. We free-flowing show, if you've ever heard it. We go by the seat of our pants. So.
Don't say seat of your pants next to John when he's thinking wrestlers, all right?
He's got a cigarette on his ear and one in each hand, and I don't know how he plans to maneuver this, but I guarantee you he will.
Smoke break.
See you, Curbs.
All right, guys, be good. Talk to you soon.
Okay.
See you.
Bye. Chris Kerber, your voice of your St. Louis Blues on KMOX Radio. That was really good. I didn't want to waste his time with this last one because I think John answered it fairly well. The last question here, and that's usually asked around the All-Star break, is you're 3 points out of a wild card with the game in hand. You, similarly, though, are 5 points out of being tied for last place. So what that tells you is the weakness of the Western Conference this year. A lot of them are trending the wrong direction. The Blues are 500 in hockey terms. They have exactly as many points as they've played games, and 82 is not going to get you into the playoffs. So how many points do they need to get into the playoffs, John? And you have a pretty fine line there.
Well, no, I mean, I think it's very safe to use the 90-point barometer as the basement. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you get to 90 points, you have no chance. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not saying the 90 points will get you in, but not using 90 points as a minimum would be foolish, because if you go back, history will tell you that the vast majority of those teams that get in have 90-plus points. So, I mean, there's no secret in coming up with that number. I just truly believe, having spent a lot of time studying these depth charts, possibilities for trades, looking at how much each team has spent, what's possible off-season free agent. I mean, just trying to conjure up different variables. In the end, the one thing with the St. Louis Blues, more so than any other team that's within their grouping, I think have truly underachieved. Mm-hmm. And I think that was highlighted in the conversation you and Kerber had. I mean, basically, when you can point to three players and say those guys have played up to or exceeded expectation, and you're talking about a half dozen legitimate NHL names that would get a C, which means it's passing, it tells you just how much upside is there to be had. And based on past performance, I'm going to believe that we're going to see that upside. I really do believe that the Blues are sitting in a much, much better position than most truly believe. I think the Blues right now, number 7 or 8, I would be utterly shocked if this team doesn't finish 7 or 8, minimally.
I think you're in a much better position because Tarasenko's starting to turn the corner. And when he can start to pick corners, you have a chance in any game, right? It's like we've seen Tarasenko, when he's at the top of his game, steal games because he'll put two in that don't belong there, and you had no chance of doing it. Nobody else plays particularly well, but you stole the game.
Now, the one thing, ironically, with all the name values and talking about guys like Schwartz and this, that, and the other thing, and even to a certain degree, Shin, I mean, we've already witnessed ourselves the level up that he can play at.
Mm-hmm.
Ironically, in the end, it may come down to a guy that none of us really considered a factor at all was Binnington, or is Binnington.
That's
if
right.
All of a sudden Binnington is just a guy, that could be problematic. That could be problematic because even if Allen's the main guy, he's going to have to – he needs a breather here and there. And simple things like how backups perform could be the difference in which team gets in and which teams don't. So
I'd be surprised if Jake Allen was the guy. I think at best for Jake Allen, they're splitting time moving forward.
Again, I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm simply pointing out, and as I said, even if Jake Allen,
yeah.
even if
no, I'm with
he
you.
Is the guy.
Were you surprised to hear that Colton Parayko would be a candidate for captaincy? Because that I was taken back by that quite a bit.
I guess the answer would be yes, just based on the demeanor, because I'm nowhere near as close to this team as I used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, not only did I know them individually, I spent more time with ownership and the coaching staff that I do, talking to players. That's not the case anymore. So I don't know for sure that Parayko does or doesn't. Kerb says he does. I'm willing to take his word for it. I can't answer the question because I don't know. Edmondson is just one of those old school guys that used to be an NHL captain because he just did his job.
Mm-hmm.
See, the problem with a guy like Edmondson is we saw a growth spurt that shocked many of us. We didn't think Edmondson was one of those guys you saw on a depth chart a couple years ago and didn't give much thought to.
Right.
Then we saw him take almost a quantum leap 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think most of last year thought he belonged in the top pairing instead of Bo.
And then we saw him continue his elevation. Now we're starting to see him level off.
Right.
I think Kirby's right. I'm not sure that he's really anything more than a high three or low three, high four.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do know is that he's a very, very steady defenseman who does his job. And when somebody needs a little assistance, he's not scared. He doesn't hesitate.
He'll
stick his nose in there.
That's a big deal.
You know, those used to be makeups of captains. So that's why I was just curious what Kerb thought about that.
I wouldn't be opposed to it. When you brought that up off the air, I'm not opposed to Edmondson. The guys that I wouldn't be opposed to right this second, O'Reilly, Braden Schenn, even though he's not playing particularly well this season, and Joel Edmondson. After that, there's not a whole lot of guys that I would appreciate being captain on this team, and there's some guys wearing an A right now that I don't think should be wearing an A. Okay.
Do you know what all those guys are going to be doing on Sunday?
Watching the Super Bowl.
Watching the Rammies and Patriots, baby!
Hey, John, we're going to be at Schnucks Rammies. Tomorrow. Are you going to be there?
I will be at Schnucks tomorrow. You daggum right I will be.
1032 Lime
Ferry Road.
It's like a 90%
chance they put out a bunch of hot dogs. John will be there.
Oh, yeah, baby. 1032 Lime Ferry Road, St. Louis, Missouri, 63125. Be there tomorrow, all day remote.
It's the Shop and Save that had the arch.
Yes. The old
the very famous, which I never realized why it had the arch. I don't know if this is the reason, but it's kind of cool because as soon as you pull out of it, you
don't
can see the arch.
Out. Yeah.
From like if you're under that arch, you can see the arch. Huh. And I'm like, that's got to be half the reason they put it there.
Huh. Probably the whole reason.
I would think so.
I don't think.
I mean, it's a nice landmark.
What would the other half be?
Because it's a nice landmark. It's like you just say, "Hey, go to the store where the arch is on Lime," and that it's a good. It's like why you have the giant Amoco sign.
Maybe that's 10%. I'm looking for the other 40.
Schnucks on Lime Ferry. The exact address.
1032.
There you go. 1032 Lime Ferry.
Look forward to seeing you puke millennials.
Yeah, we'll be there. We'll be there till 3 o'clock, and then Cam Jansen's show will be there again from 6 to 7.
That's a good program. Trent Frederick's going to be on with him at 6:30 tonight.
And we'll be live in the corner pub at the corner of Clarkson and Clayton.
All right, that dude can throw some haymakers. If you saw him yesterday, that was a fun fight. NHL fights have almost gone away from even being fun. Like you like when they mix it up, but a lot of times, you know, the guys tug on each other and just fall down. This was some haymakers.
No doubt. So, in bullet point form and wrapping up, one, good job by Kerbs.
Yep.
Two, tune in to the Cam Jansen show this evening.
Three, St. Louis has every right
and
to be upset.
Three, Hadley, once again, was 100% correct. St. Louis, get over yourself. The Rams are gone. Live with it. You're partially to blame for it. Hadley, whoops, TJ. Once again, mano a mano in a discussion of facts. And it's a fact that Hadley has more podcasts on his Apple than you do.
you guys have a good day. Frank Pena, Large Morning Show in the Afternoon. Coming up next, then that Cam Jansen program at the Corner Pops.